Do you remember last week I asked you an unfair question? I said, is there anywhere that you'd rather be right now? And I'm going to ask that question, and again, I'm not going to ask for any answers. But what got me thinking about that question is a quote by A.W. Tozer, who was a theologian and a prophet and a general nutter from last century. And he says, I mean it when I say that I would rather worship God than do anything else. You may reply, if you worship God, you do nothing else. But that only reveals that you have not done your homework. The beautiful part of worship is that it prepares you and enables you to zero in on the important things that must be done for God. Listen to me. Practically every great deed done in the Church of Christ, all the way back to the Apostle Paul, was done by people blazing with the radiant worship of their God. A survey of church history will prove that it was those who were the yearning worshippers who also became the great workers. Those great saints whose hymns we so tenderly sing were active in their faith to the point that we must wonder how they ever did it all. The great hospitals have grown out of the hearts of worshipping men. The mental institutions grew out of the hearts of worshipping and compassionate men and women. We should say that wherever the church has come out of her lethargy, rising from her sleep and into the tides of revival and spiritual renewal, always the worshippers were back of it. And just that. We should say that wherever the church has come out of her lethargy, rising from her sleep and into the tides of revival and spiritual renewal, always the worshippers were back of it. And I guess in these last two talks, in this, last week's talk and this week's talk, I kind of want to, this is kind of a rallying cry. Let's be those worshippers that are at the back of spiritual renewal and tides of revival. Let's be those people. This is the weird and wonderful thing about worship. By giving God the honor and glory he deserves, every part of our lives benefit. We don't worship for the benefit, we worship because he is worthy. But because of God's great mercy and love, we benefit. That's brilliant, isn't it? Bill Johnson, the pastor of Bethel Church in California, says, we're transformed according to our exposure to the glory, to the presence of God. When we draw close to God, we're changed. Fact. If we're not, then we've got to ask ourselves, was that true worship? And if it wasn't, then we're kind of wasting our time. And I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself a bit here, but the reasons why we sometimes have extended times of sung worship, like we did just now, is because we want to soak in the presence of God. We want to soak in his glory. We don't want to be people who just dip our toes in. We want to be people that jump in. We repeat songs because we want the truth that's in them to get to our core. We don't want to kind of just sing songs, sing lines that then are lost because we're on to the next one. Sometimes we need to repeat stuff so it really sinks in. I don't know. I constantly forget things, and yet if I repeat them, that's a good way of a good way of remembering. Right. So, That's a great quote. I didn't realize it was going to be there. Why do we sing? That was what I was thinking. So why do we sing? Because we're told to in the Bible. That's one reason. So on numerous occasions in the Psalms, it says, sing to God, sing praise to the Lord, sing joyfully to the Lord. In the New Testament, it says, sing to God with gratitude in your hearts. So the Bible encourages it. It's modeled to us by some of the kind of heroes of our faith. So Moses and David and Paul and Mary, the mother of Jesus, the disciples and Jesus himself are all recorded to have sung worship, not to mention the angels and the heavenly hosts. And as we go back to when you read this, the Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. So God rejoices over us with singing. Now that is just insanely brilliant. And so, as far as I'm concerned, if God does it, then it's a good thing. And we're told in Ephesians somewhere to be imitators of God. And so I think this is a good thing to imitate. Let's sing. God rejoices over us with singing. We don't deserve it. We haven't done anything to earn it. But he sings over us because he loves us and adores us. There are loads of other key reasons that we sing. Melody and harmony bring colour to black and white. They broaden our vocabulary. It broadens our vocabulary to communicate a message. A classic example of this is scores in movies, where music, the music that underpins the picture and dialogue, often transforms the scene into something that really moves us. From being something kind of, what an achievement he's done, he's fought against hardship and all this kind of stuff, yeah, victory, to just looking a bit silly and kind of almost doing like an Irish jig at the end, which I find quite interesting. So some of you may now think, you may be feeling uncomfortable. You may be thinking, so you're manipulating me, like you're using music to make me feel things. And I say, yes, yes, I am. And I'm being a bit provocative, but I'd like you to just think about the word manipulation for a second. So on many occasions, maybe on most occasions, it's used with an underhanded and kind of devious side to it, connotation to it. So that's not what I'm talking about. But when you think about a physiotherapist and how they manipulate muscles and fibers to bring flexibility and motion and strength, now you're beginning to get an idea of what I'm getting at. So yeah, music has a power to manipulate. But in worship, my aim is to use that positively in a good way. Because you see, I believe that God made music that way. I think God made music to stir us and to ultimately bring us closer to him. God's gift of music helps us propel our worship from what could be just in truth, like I was talking about last week, spirit and in truth, could be just in truth, like we say great truths, that's fine, but to in spirit and in truth, often music engages our heart. And one more thing, which is an amazing byproduct of music and song, and precisely because it engages the heart, we remember things when we sing them. Jonathan was just telling me last week about how him and his wife and his two daughters still can burst into a song that they learnt when the little girls were kind of four, and that's what, 20 years ago or something like that. And I'm sure we can all think of songs that we learnt in our childhood that we've remembered because they go to a kind of tune, and we annoyed our parents with them and that kind of stuff. So I kind of think about the scripture that I know off by heart. A lot of it is because it's contained in a song, and I need to get better at that, the stuff that isn't contained in songs. But that is a great byproduct of music. Right, so why these songs? Why these kind of particular ones? Why did I choose the songs that we did this evening? Why do we have the pool of songs that we've got here that we use at All Saints? It's a good question. We live in an incredible time where not only have we got the kind of great pool of songs from centuries past, but we've also got songs from every corner of the globe, even songs that were written last week. You know, we can tune into them with the internet and be worshiping to them in an instant. So actually, that makes it quite difficult to narrow down which ones we choose. There are tons of things that we think about here at All Saints, and I think about as the worship director here when we're choosing the songs. I guess the first one is it biblical? Is it saying anything that doesn't agree with what the Bible says? That kind of counts it out straight away. And actually, even the like some of the great hymns, there are kind of a few suspect verses here and there that I tend to drop, you know, if I do them. And so that's the first thing I check. Are they relevant to us here? So maybe a song that's like amazing song that's kind of doing amazing things and having lots of coverage in a different country wouldn't be right for here. And I can't quite put my finger on why that is, but I think we're going through something that I guess South Londoners kind of go through, and that may be different to what other people around the world is. So I wonder, is this song kind of right for us here? And thinking about, are people going to be able to relate to it? Are the words understandable? Are they the words and the tune easy to sing? And then even more mundane, things like the feel of the song. And so often at the moment, there's loads and loads of really good mid-tempo songs. And so even if a good mid-tempo song comes up on the new Tim Hughes album or whatever it is, I won't necessarily do it because we've got lots of them. Whereas if something comes up that is more upbeat or is quieter, they're the ones that are more difficult to get sometimes. So I'll pounce on them. You may have cottoned on, even from tonight's worship, that I am passionate about new songs, and I love introducing new songs. And you know, you could ask, why am I passionate about that? Well, it says, there's lots of places where it says sing a new song in the Psalms. sing a new song. Five times it says it. And I was thinking, that's not because David or the psalmists were kind of worried about royalties, and they thought, if we get everyone to sing new songs, then we're going to be rolling in it. And I don't think primarily, although I think it's part of it, I don't think primarily it's to keep people's interest. But I think at the root of it is because God's mercies are new every morning. And God surprises us with amazing things day after day. And we see God in a new light, and our natural thing to do as followers of Jesus is to turn that into praise. And that's why songs are written all the time, and that's a brilliant thing. I've got to get the balance right of not doing too many new songs so that people can really join in and be a part of it. But I love introducing new songs. And I feel if I do that kind of, if that's part of our culture, that's a really good thing. Yeah, just on, finally on that note, you remember Sev a couple of weeks ago, maybe you didn't, Sev was talking about, generally about our meetings and how they weren't a meeting. So they weren't, they're not all about me. And so I just want to encourage you, and I would say this, I know, but don't gauge how much you're going to give in worship by if your favourite song comes on. Because God is, like I've said, and I'll say again, he's worthy of our worship, and we can engage with him in songs even if we don't like the tune. Don't be held back by that. We're not consumers, we're participators. And part of that is engaging in worship, even if it's not your favourite song. This is something that I think we all can struggle with, so it's not, I'm not saying I don't, but it's a great thing to make a decision to worship. This is a quick diagram of how we choose songs here. Sunday's readings are perused, the special Sunday's list is examined, the themes in the back of the hymn book are consulted, the list of the ones the choir can do is checked, the ones no one knows or likes sheet is studied, the congregational requests envelope are open, the prayer meeting prayers, prays for guidance, the worship committee whittles down the options, the ministry team meets for some coffee. Everything is fed into the parish computer, which does a very complex calculation. Meanwhile, the music director just picks a few of her favourites. There you have it. Not really. Okay, why do we raise our hands? We're getting short. Each question has a shorter and shorter answer. It's just about body language, really, ultimately. There's nothing magical about raising hands or kneeling or dancing or whatever we do outwardly. But it is an outward sign of what's going on in the inside, and there's real power in that. It comes back to that idea of not just dipping our toes in, but jumping fully in. I think it's one of the most natural things in the world. It's what we do when we rejoice and give praise. Do you remember this photo from last week? No one's taught them to do that. And I think that's what happens when you're celebrating or when you're in awe of someone or something. You lift your hands to rejoice. And in fact, in most of the photos I showed last week, people had their hands raised when I was describing different types of different places we aim our worship at. So it's not weird, it's very natural. Admittedly, some people are more outwardly flamboyant than others. And that, you know, so don't feel like, oh no, you know, I have to start kind of jumping up and down or whatever. But I think equally, don't feel like you can't. More jumping up and down. Just a little story. Raising my hands became increased in significance after I had my two baby boys. And because what they did, they don't do it so much anymore, but they still do it, is they run up to me and they put their hands up and they say, "Lift me up, Daddy. Lift me up, Daddy." And now, so often when I raise my hands, I realize that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying to God. I'm saying, "Lift me up. I need you." I like to think that my boys are saying, "You are greater than me. You are stronger than me." I'm not sure whether they are or not, but that's what I'm saying when I lift my hands, and that's what my heart is saying, and so my body language is reflecting that. Right, I think we've got two more questions, and I don't even know whether they're on here or not. Ah, this is the classic. I'm definitely in the expert category. We're not going to get competitive about this, but there are the dueling light bulbs is quite a good one, and I have become more inclined to do the heartburn as well, but that's the personal thing. What's that all about? I didn't know how to really write this one as a question. But there are a few things that we do, and we even did it back there a little bit, that may seem a bit strange. So one of them is what you might call singing in the spirit. And that's basically singing out songs to God that aren't projected onto the screen. And I really, as a worship leader and as part of this church, I really want to encourage that. Because so often, although the words that we sing are amazing, there's something going on in our hearts that we want to express. We want to express out loud as part of this group together. We want to express this. And I really, really want to encourage freedom in this place. So in 2 Corinthians 3:17, "Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." So we want freedom here, don't we? That is that's why we're here, I think. Most of us, definitely. And so I want to encourage freedom here so that we can sing out, and also sing in tongues, which is a whole other thing that I haven't got that much time to go into, but it's the idea of God giving us a language to express things that are even too deep for our own words. And that, again, it's the same with whether we're singing in tongues or not. We need God's Spirit to be in us in order for our worship to be acceptable to God. It's kind of like a kind of secular, is that what you call it, kind of thing. And so singing in tongues often God gives us an indiscernible language that the Spirit enables us to speak or sing, to express in this context directly to God our deepest heartfelt praise, worship, prayers and longings. We can't do this on our own, but only in the power of the Holy Spirit. Although, and there's definitely some of you there here that will think that is really, really weird. And it kind of is. But it's a good thing. There's plenty of biblical kind of backup for that. And it's something that we should eagerly desire. And it's something that we need to have space for, which is another part of freedom, having space to express this stuff. I have never sung in tongues, but I eagerly desire it, and I hope that one day soon I'll have that gift. One of the catchphrases of my old boss was, "Let's err on the side of freedom." He loved his catchphrases, and kind of he did that one to death. But I really do like that. You know, we can err on the side of safety, on the side of just, you know, sticking to the plan, doing my list of songs in the order that I've prepared them. And very often that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing in itself. But erring on the side of freedom is saying, okay, God, if you want to change my plans, then you've completely got my permission. When we surrender to him and give him free rein over our worship times together, life-changing, life-defining moments follow, even if sometimes they may look slightly strange. Timothy Keller says, that's not there, brilliant quote which should have been up there, because it says, "Worshipping God is an instinct that's gone awry. As a result, it must be learned, but as it's learned, it feels utterly right and natural." That kind of brings me on to the last one, which is, what's stopping us? Why isn't every time we meet up a kind of all-out, passionate, blazing time of worship? And I need to say that at this point, this isn't a kind of a condemning thing, and I don't want you going home feeling like, oh, I've been told off. But the basic reason is pride. It's a very small pride. Pride should have been big, shouldn't it? When we put ourselves at the center of the universe and think that everything revolves around us, we think that I'm worthy. And the kind of golden child of pride, cynicism, sneaks in, pointing out the things wrong with what's going on and mocking them. These things kill focus and connection with God faster than anything else. And maybe because of the culture we live in, we have to be guarded against them day in, day out, in order to deepen our times of worship. It's not right to disengage our minds, but it is a good thing to disengage our pride. And I can guarantee that if that's something that you kind of struggle with, then really being deliberate about putting that to one side will be the best thing you've ever done. I think possibly, controversial, men may struggle with this slightly more. Speak to me later if you don't agree. Because I think somewhere down the line, culture has told us that singing or showing emotion in church isn't manly. So something, this isn't in church, granted, but... Any Liverpool supporters? Don't whack it up, I'm Liverpool. I love that. love that passion and that kind of, all out. So displaying outwardly what they're feeling inside, they're part of something. That was 95,000 people singing that, which was pretty cool. But somewhere, it's kind of a bit of a bugbear of mine, somewhere we decided that that's okay on the football terraces, but not okay in church. And that, I really struggle with that. That saddens me. So don't fall for this. Don't fall for pride getting in the way. Men or women. Remember, because worshipping God can be an instinct that's gone awry, we must commit to persevering, getting stuck in, giving it a go, giving our all. And soon we'll feel more and more ready and equipped to do what we were created to do, to be who we were created to be, God's people, worshipping Him in spirit and in truth.